Welcome to today's deep dive. Today is Tuesday, August 11th, 2026. And, you know, we are standing right on the edge of the fall tech season.
Oh, yeah, it is right around the corner now.
It is. And the biggest, I mean, absolute biggest white whale in the history of consumer electronics has just been fully comprehensively exposed.
Right. It really is the single device the entire industry has been, you know, speculating about for the better part of a decade.
Literally a decade.
And the curtain has finally been pulled back.
Yeah, completely pulled back. So our mission for you today is simple. We are going to entirely bypass the rumor mill, the shaky spy photos, and all that endless speculation on internet forums.
Because there's a lot of it out there.
Oh, there's so much noise. But by the end of this conversation, you are going to be thoroughly briefed on Apple's long-awaited entry into the foldable ecosystem, which is the iPhone Ultra.
And we actually have, for once, the definitive data to do it, rather than just, you know, educated guesses.
We do. We're looking at a massive stack of highly credible sources today. The crown jewel is this exhaustive hardware teardown and intelligence report from Tekken Analysis.
Yeah, that report is incredible.
It's insane. And their findings are independently corroborated by major supply chain leaks from Sonny Dixon, 9to5 Mac McRumors, and senior technology analyst Mark Gurman over at Bloomberg.
So we're getting a comprehensive look under the hood weeks before the device even hits the stage.
Exactly. And I promise you, by the time we wrap up here, you will understand exactly how Apple solved the fatal fundamental flaws of folding phones.
This is huge.
It is. You're also going to learn why a beloved core iPhone feature was entirely scrapped for this model.
That's going to make some people mad.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And finally, we'll get into why holding this device is going to cost you roughly as much as a reliable used car.
Yeah, brace yourselves for that one.
Seriously.
Yeah.
So to help synthesize all these highly technical leaks into clear, actionable insights for you, I've got our resident tech analyst here. Let's get right into it.
I am ready. There is an incredible amount of dense, bleeding-edge engineering to unpack in these reports.
Okay, let's unpack this. I want to start with the most obvious question, like the one anyone who has been following foldable phones for the last 6 or 7 years is asking, which is, why did Apple wait until 2026?
Right, why now?
Yeah, and to understand this, think about taking a piece of thick, stiff cardboard and forcing it to fold in half.
Oh, and yeah.
You hear that awful crunching sound, right?
What?
The inner fibers tear, and when you try to open it back up, you are left with this permanent, jagged, ugly crease right down the middle.
It's never going to be flat again.
Exactly. It is never going to be perfectly flat again.
And that cardboard analogy, yeah, it perfectly describes the structural problem of early foldable technology.
Right.
Like, the legacy devices were essentially brute forcing a piece of glass into a really tight hinge.
Which just fundamentally doesn't work.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
You would get these visible interior seams, these depressible center grooves that you could physically feel every single time you swipe your thumb across the screen.
It was so distracting. But then think about the spine of a high-end luxury hardcover book.
Okay, yeah.
When you open that book, the pages lie perfectly flat. The spine sort of rolls and distributes the tension seamlessly across a wider area.
Right. There's no sharp fold.
Exactly. There is no tearing, no ugly crease. It's an elegant engineered solution. And looking at the Tekken Analysis teardown, it seems like Apple has finally brought that luxury book spine philosophy to consumer electronics.
They absolutely have.
So break down this new proprietary hinge for us.
Okay. So Apple developed what they are calling a multi-pivot floating gear mechanical hinge.
Multi-pivot floating gear.
Yeah, it's a mouthful. And to understand how it actually works, we have to look at the materials.
Okay.
Legacy industry foldables. You know, they relied on standard aluminum or maybe stainless steel alloys. Apple just threw that out.
Completely gone.
Completely. This new hinge assembly is constructed entirely from grade 5 titanium and carbon fiber composites.
Wait, grade 5 titanium. So they are using aerospace grade materials. Why go to that extreme just for a phone hinge?
Because of how it needs to handle the inner screen, which is made of a seamless UTG or ultra-thin glass layer.
Okay, right. Ultra-thin glass.
Yeah. And aluminum, it deforms over time under stress.
Right. It bends.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But grade 5 titanium has an incredibly high strength-to-weight ratio, and it doesn't warp.
Wow.
So instead of pinching the glass into a tight V-shape when closed, like that folded piece of cardboard you mentioned, this gearless mechanical structure uses a much broader interior cavity.
So wait, when you shut the phone, the glass isn't actually folding flat against itself at the crease?
It is not. The hinge mechanism actively distributes the bend radius of the glass inside that titanium cavity.
Okay, I see.
It forces the screen into this gentle teardrop shape inside the chassis. So it gently rolls the glass rather than creasing it.
Oh, that makes so much sense.
Right. And then when you open the device, this 7.8-inch interflexible OLED display, it just pulls completely taut.
Leaving it totally flat.
It presents a 100% flat surface.
Yes.
Zero crease.
A completely flat folding screen. I mean, finally. And the Taken game teardown telemetry confirms this structural integrity is guaranteed for over 500,000 fold cycles.
500,000 folds.
Yeah. If you do the math on that for a second, you could open and close this thing more than 100 times a day for a decade and the hinge wouldn't fail.
It's wild.
But moving parts, you know, they always bring up another massive issue, which is durability against the elements.
Oh, for sure. Dust and water.
Yeah. A single grain of sand getting into early foldables would just destroy the gears.
Legacy devices really stumbled there. Like, the best the early industry could do was an IPX8 rating.
Right.
And, you know, the 8 meant it had some water resistance, but that X meant it had absolutely no certification against dust or solid particles.
Pocket lint was literally a death sentence for those screens.
It really was. But because Apple's titanium floating mechanical structure is gearless and heavily sealed, the iPhone Ultra actually achieves full IP68 water and dust resistance certification.
Wow, so it's fully sealed.
Yeah, it is a massive leap over the legacy standard.
That brings to mind the quote from Mark Gurman that was highlighted in our sources. He said, Apple is rarely first to a hardware category, but when they enter, they resolve fundamental engineering flaws that plagued predecessors.
Yeah, it is so true in this case.
It really validates your patience as a consumer, you know?
Yeah.
If you waited to buy a foldable, you avoided the era of the depressible center groove.
Yeah, you skipped the beta test.
Exactly. Yeah. But getting a perfectly flat 7.8-inch screen requires a chassis to hold it. And keeping that chassis manageable leads to some serious trade-offs.
Yeah, and the primary constraint Apple faced here was weight and thickness.
Right.
Their absolute mandate was that this massive device had to weigh less than the standard iPhone 18 Pro Max.
Which is already a heavy phone.
Right. And even more challenging, when unfolded, the device had to have a sub-5mm chassis profile.
Sub-5mm. For context, that is astoundingly thin. But here's where it gets really interesting, and honestly where I have to push back a bit.
Okay, let's hear it.
Because achieving that sub-5mm thickness led directly to a massive engineering sacrifice. According to the supply chain leaks, they killed Face ID.
Yeah, they did.
True depth facial recognition is completely gone on the iPhone Ultra. I am struggling to understand this. Isn't Apple taking a huge step backward here? Like, are they masking an actual functional downgrade as an innovation?
I mean, that skepticism is going to be the most debated topic in the tech community over the next few months. Guaranteed.
I would think so.
But what's fascinating here is the sheer, unforgiving reality of physics. You have to look at the Z height footprint.
The Z height?
Yeah, the vertical depth required to actually house the internal components.
So how deep does a Face ID sensor actually need to be?
Well, a traditional true depth Face ID module, which contains all those infrared projectors and dot emitters that scan your face in 3D, it requires a vertical depth of roughly 7mm.
And Apple's hard target for the unfolded chassis was sub-5mm.
Exactly. The math simply does not work.
No, it doesn't.
You cannot fit a 7mm sensor into a 5mm space without having a massive, unsightly camera bump protruding from the front of the inner display.
Oh, that would be awful.
It would completely ruin the entire point of engineering a perfectly flat folding canvas.
Right, right.
So Apple engineers had to pivot. And the solution they landed on was integrating a high-density capacitive Touch ID sensor directly into the side power button.
And how small is that side sensor?
That one requires a sub-2.1mm depth.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which easily slides right into the ultra-thin titanium chassis.
Okay, I understand the physical limitation. You can't break the laws of physics.
No, you can't.
But still, going from advanced 3D facial scanning back to fingerprint scanning, it feels very 2017 to me.
I get that.
It feels like I'm paying top dollar for older biometric technology.
On paper, it might seem like a regression, yeah.
Yeah.
But when we look at the ergonomics of how you actually interact with a foldable device, it creates a massive functional upgrade.
Really? How so?
Consider the display real estate first. Because they removed that bulky TrueDepth array, they entirely eliminated the top notch and the dynamic island from the inner screen.
Wait, really? So when you unfold it, there is no camera cutout at all?
None. Zero. That 7.8-inch inner OLED panel is completely unobstructed.
That's amazing.
Just edge-to-edge pixels. It maximizes the usable real estate for, you know, gaming, video editing, multitasking, all of that.
Okay, that is a huge plus.
And second, think about the physical act of unfolding a phone. If it had Face ID, you'd have to physically unfold the device with both hands.
Right.
Hold it up, align it directly with your face, and then wait for the optical scan to register.
Which can be incredibly awkward if the device is resting flat on a conference room table or, you know, if you're outside wearing sunglasses and weird lighting.
Exactly the problem.
It's
clunky. But with the side-mounted Touch ID, as you reach into your pocket or your bag to grab the phone, your thumb naturally rests on the power button.
Oh.
You press it, the high-density sensor reads your fingerprint flawlessly, and you unlock the device before you have even finished unfolding it.
So you are bypassing the lock screen entirely.
Completely.
I suppose instantaneous access makes a lot of sense for this form factor. But what about the battery? I mean, doesn't a massive 7.8-inch screen just devour power?
Well, that brings up the third benefit of killing Face ID.
Oh.
True depth requires continuous optical facial scanning arrays firing off constantly to detect if you're paying attention to the screen.
Oh, right. The attention awareness feature.
Exactly. By moving to a capacitive physical touch sensor, they radically reduce that continuous background battery consumption.
That makes sense.
And all of that saved power is rerouted to power the display.
Okay, I admit it. I'm coming around. It is a recalibration for the form factor, like prioritizing functional ergonomics and battery life over keeping a feature just for the sake of having it.
Exactly. It's a pragmatic choice.
And since we are talking about rerouting battery power, let's look at what is actually running this massive variable display.
Yeah, let's look at the specs.
The take-in-game telemetry data gives us a highly detailed picture of the silicon driving this hardware.
And it's impressive.
The iPhone Ultra is powered by the bespoke A20 Pro 2-nanometer chipset.
Yes.
A 2-nanometer chipset. For those of us who aren't electrical engineers, explain why moving down to 2 nanometers is such a big deal.
Okay, so it comes down to transistor density. The nanometer measurement refers to the size of the transistors on the chip.
Okay.
The smaller the transistor, the closer they can be packed together on the silicon.
Right.
When electrons have to travel a shorter distance between those transistors, the chip processes data much faster. But more importantly, it generates significantly less heat and uses less battery.
Heat management.
Right. Because in a sub-5-millimeter chassis where there is almost zero physical room to dissipate heat, that 2-nanometer thermal efficiency is literally the only way the device survives without melting in your hands.
So it's incredibly powerful, but runs freezing cold.
Exactly.
What else is on that silicon?
Well, it features a 50-core neural engine designed specifically for local, on-device artificial intelligence tasks.
50 cores?
Yeah. And it's paired with 12 gigabytes of high-bandwidth LPDDR5X unified system memory.
Okay, LPDDR5X unified memory. Break that jargon down for the user experience. What does that actually mean for the person holding the phone?
Think of unified memory, like an ultra-wide, super-fast highway inside the phone.
Okay.
It allows the central processor and the graphics processor to share the exact same pool of data instantly without having to copy files back and forth.
So there's no bottleneck.
Right, no bottleneck. Because of that highway and the graphene thermal dissipation layers woven into the chassis, this phone can handle sustained 60 frames per second AAA gaming performance.
Oh, wow.
With hardware ray tracing.
Wait, hardware ray tracing on a phone. So it is physically calculating how light bounces off objects and shadows in video game in real time, like a high-end desktop gaming rig.
Yes, exactly like that.
That is insane.
Furthermore, that memory highway easily powers the heavy multitasking workloads coming in iOS 20.
Right, the new OS.
We are talking seamless split-screen functionality where you can run two incredibly heavy applications side by side.
Okay.
You can pull up virtual trackpads on the lower half of the screen while typing on the top half.
Like a mini laptop.
Yeah. You can even capture and render 8K ProRes video directly on the device without stuttering.
That is wild. 8K video on a phone. But how are they powering all of this all day?
So the teardown reveals a 4,800 milliamp hour dual cell battery with MagSafe 2 charging.
A dual cell battery? Why dual cell? They couldn't just use one big battery.
Not in a foldable.
Oh, because of the hinge?
Right. Because the phone folds in half, you have to physically split the battery into two separate cells, one for each side of the hinge, just to maintain that 5 millimeter thickness.
Oh, wow. That sounds complicated.
The engineering challenge there is massive because the phone's power management system has to perfectly balance the charge and discharge rates between the two separate physical cells.
So one side doesn't overheat or drain faster than the other.
Exactly. It has to pull evenly from both.
Man, when you lay all these specs out, the 8K video, the ray tracing, the multitasking, the dual batteries, it really isn't a traditional smartphone at all.
No, it's not.
It is a pocket-sized production studio.
That's a great way to put it.
And if you are carrying around a piece of equipment that powerful, you want an aesthetic that tells the world you are holding something incredibly special.
And Apple is acutely aware of the psychology of luxury hardware. They know their target demographic for this device perfectly.
Which explains the radical color shift mentioned in the accessory leaks.
Yeah, the color changes are huge.
The data from manufacturers in China confirms the absolute death of Apple's traditional space gray and midnight colors for this tier of product.
They're gone.
Instead, the iPhone Ultra is launching in exclusive luxury finishes, specifically a brilliant bruffed silver and an ultra-deep dark blue.
Yep. And those colors are applied to a matte-brushed Grade 5 titanium frame featuring precision-machined edge chamfers. They also designed a custom camera island that cleverly masks the component depth across the two asymmetric folded halves of the phone.
Okay, that description sounds more like a high-end sports car or a luxury timepiece than a phone. But why restrict the colors so strictly? Like, why not just give people the black phone they usually want?
It is entirely about visual distinction.
Oh, status.
Exactly. When a company introduces a new tier of ultra-luxury product, they need it to be instantly recognizable from across a crowded room.
Right. If it just looks like a regular iPhone, what's the point?
Exactly. If they offered the Ultra in the exact same space gray as a standard entry-level iPhone, it blends in. It loses its status factor.
Yeah.
But forcing the brilliant brushed silver and deep dark blue establishes an immediate visual vocabulary. Everyone instantly knows you are holding the Ultra, not a standard flagship.
So what does this all mean for the consumer? All of this Grade 5 titanium, the carbon fiber multi-gear hinge, the perfectly flat ultra-thin glass, the 2-nanometer bespoke silicon, and the dual-cell battery management. It brings us to a staggering reality check regarding your wallet.
Yeah, it does. The engineering we just described does not come cheap.
Not at all.
You're going to be paying a premium unlike anything we've seen in the standard smartphone market.
According to the leaks, the target MSRP baseline for the 512 gigabyte model is $1,999.
And that's just the baseline.
Right. And if you want the premium editions, the 1 terabyte or 2 terabyte NVMe PCIe 5.0 storage options, you are looking at scaling up to between $2,399 and $2,599.
Yep. And honestly, that PCIe 5.0 storage is non-negotiable if you are actually going to use the 8K ProRes video features.
Because of the data transfer rates.
Right. Writing 8K video data is like trying to drink from a fire hose, you know? You need storage fast enough to swallow all that data instantly without crashing the device.
But still, $2,500 for a phone.
I know.
Yeah.
But if we connect this to the bigger picture, it reveals Apple's overarching market strategy.
Okay.
You cannot look at the iPhone Ultra and compare it to the standard iPhone 18 Pro Max, which has a base MSRP of, you know, $1,199.
They aren't in the same league.
They're not competing against each other.
Yeah.
Apple is effectively creating a completely new product category above the Pro Max.
So how do they justify that category mentally for the buyer?
They are positioning the Ultra as a fusion device. It combines the expansive productivity canvas of an iPad mini,
right,
the elite photography and processing power of an iPhone Pro, and the material craftsmanship of, and this is how Wall Street analysts call it in the reports, precision titanium horology.
Horology, like high-end mechanical watchmaking.
Exactly.
Like craftsmanship you see in a Rolex, a Patek Philippe, or an Audemars Piguet. They want this phone to sit in that psychological luxury space.
Yes. And this raises an important question regarding availability. Because when you treat a consumer electronic device like a piece of high-end mechanical horology, you run into severe manufacturing constraints.
You can't just pump them out.
No, you cannot just stamp these out on an assembly line at the speed of a standard aluminum phone.
Yeah, Wall Street equity research data included in the Tekken report highlights that the multi-gear titanium floating hinge is incredibly complex to manufacture at scale.
It is. The yield rates, you know, the percentage of hinges that actually pass quality control without microscopic defects are notoriously difficult to perfect when working with titanium and carbon fiber.
Because it's so rigid.
Right. So as a result, initial global supply for the first production year will be tightly constrained to just 5 to 7 million units worldwide.
5 to 7 million units globally for a major Apple product launch is essentially a drop in the ocean.
That's nothing.
It is engineered scarcity combined with an ultra-premium price tier. This strategy aggressively targets executive professionals, creative artists, and those early tech adopters who demand the absolute pinnacle of mobile hardware. And because there are so few of them available, and the demand will undoubtedly set historical pre-order volume records, this device is going to retain unprecedented secondary market resale value.
Oh, absolutely. Legacy Android foldables tend to depreciate rapidly.
They tank in value.
They do. But the iPhone Ultra will hold its value because you simply will not be able to easily walk into a retail store and buy one off the shelf.
Which just feeds the hype.
It does. It drives massive media buzz. It strengthens Apple's brand value at the highest luxury tier. And of course, it generates industry-leading profit margins.
It truly is a masterclass in market disruption.
It really is.
So let's briefly recap the journey we've been on today for you. We started with the holy grail of foldables, right? Apple has finally solved the display crease.
Finally.
They engineered a proprietary titanium and carbon fiber floating gear hinge that gently rolls the ultra-thin glass inside a cavity, resulting in a perfectly flat 7.8-inch display.
No more depressible groove.
Right. And they ruthlessly prioritized form and function, boldly swapping out the 7mm TrueDepth Face ID hardware for a sub-2.1mm side-mounted capacitive Touch ID sensor.
Which was a bold move.
Very bold. But that allowed them to achieve a sub-5mm unfolded chassis while eliminating the display notch entirely. Then they packed it with the absolute bleeding edge of silicon, the A20 Pro 2nm chip, with 12 gigs of unified memory, turning this ultra-thin device into a sustained AAA gaming and 8K video editing powerhouse.
A literal production studio in your pocket.
And they wrapped the whole package in exclusive silver and dark blue titanium finishes, slapping a $2,000-plus luxury price tag on it. It seems like the definitive end of the beta testing era for foldable phones.
It is a massive leap forward. But, you know, as everyday communication devices cross the $2,500 threshold and rebrand themselves alongside terms like precision horology, are we witnessing the end of the smartphone as a universal technological equalizer?
No, that's an interesting point.
Right. Because for the last 15 years, the beauty of the smartphone revolution was that the billionaire CEO and the college student were fundamentally holding the exact same powerful supercomputer in their pockets.
Yeah, that's true.
They had access to the same information, the same communication tools, the same digital potential. But with the iPhone Ultra, we might be entering a new era where our pocket technology serves as a stark, visible physical divide.
Wow.
It's creating an exclusive class of elite computing, boasting massive digital canvases and processing capabilities that the average consumer can simply no longer access.
Will there be a two-tiered system for how we interact with the digital world? That is something incredibly profound for you to mull over as you keep your eyes peeled for the official September 2026 reveal event. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. And remember, the next time you open a luxury hardcover book and watch how smoothly that spine rolls to keep the pages perfectly flat, you are looking at the exact mechanical inspiration that just changed mobile computing forever. See you next time.